Drug Enforcement Agency, right? I know them personally, but, you know, I don't want to be their friend anymore. The DEA was making a drug bust, and they turned it into a chase, car chase, in the freeways of San Diego. And what ended up happening is that the criminals ended up tossing like $17,000 out the window on the freeway during rush hour. I mean, I would love to tell you that the people that were watching all this stayed in their cars and, like, you know, let the officers pick all the money up, right? I would like to tell you that that happened, but no. They went crazy. They were going across the freeway like they were playing Frogger, right? And poof, 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 poof. They were picking up the 20, the 50, the $100 bills. That's crazy what people do. Turn it up a little bit. Welcome to East Lake Church Playoffs. Come on, guys. Woo! Woo! Imagine, you know, in the freeway picking up the $20, $100 bill, you know. Woo! Yeah. Come on, guys. We're in church. We can dance. Come on. Come on. Come on. Come on. You were at Las Pulgas last night. Come on. Yeah, crazy stuff what people do, right? Crazy stuff what people do. Welcome to East Lake Church Playas. Come on. It might sound bad. It might sound funny. But that's what people do for money. Crazy stuff. A lot of you guys don't know that song, right? That's old school song. I was in elementary, I think. Crazy stuff, what people do for money. Money is a powerful thing. It can make us do things that we thought we never do. Right? It can make us do things that we thought we never do. It has destroyed lives. It has destroyed marriages. People have committed suicide because of it. It has been the driving force for a lot of evil in our world, but it also has been the driving force for a lot of good things. Money is a powerful thing. That's why the Bible has so much to say about the subject. And today we're going to be talking about how to have the best year ever financially. And if you're here for the first time, you're probably thinking, I can't believe I came to church on the money talk. Man, I invited Pancho from Oxo today, and you're talking about money. Well, just be happy he didn't show up with your parents on the sex talk. Yeah. It's going to be happening next series. Okay? Warning. Woo-hoo. Right? So sex and money are tough topics. They are. In fact, most churches are ashamed or scared to talk about these two things that cause the most pain, sex and money. And I understand that this topic might bring up some tension. Oh, I can't believe the church is talking about money. Oh, money, 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 money. Right? It can bring up some tension. We talk about real stuff here. We don't shy away about the tough topics, real life struggles. And money brings big boy problems into our lives. And I know, because I know some of you. We got some issues. Right? Money is a big, 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 big issue. It is. But I can understand why there is some fears when it comes to this topic. Grab your pen. Here's your first fill-in. Common fears when talking about money. Here's the first one. Pressure. Maybe you've been in a church environment that used pressure when talking about money, or it kind of feels like a sales environment that turns up the pressure, and then they're not letting you out the door until you sign the timeshare agreement. By the way, Melissa, please lock the doors. We're not going to let anybody out. Well, let me share a little story about timeshares. We went on vacation with two other couples. Los Prieto and Los Lopez. And we showed up at the, at their car rental place, right? And there was this lady there, like, hey, hi, oh, really friendly. Hey, hi, oh, hey. Hey, you guys want some free tickets? You can go free tickets for this. You can get free tickets for that. And you can go here for free. All you have to do is go to this presentation for 2 hours. She was really friendly, yeah? Very friendly. She convinced us. And we're like, hey, 2 hours, why not? We get free tickets for this, and we can get free tickets for that. We can go to Scared. We can go to Isla Mujeres, and, you know, for free, you know. So let's go. So there we were. You know, it was a nice place. And the way we arrived, it was like VIP. We were like, wow, hey, we're important people. Right, cool. Hey, welcome. And this place was beautiful. It was amazing. It was like, wow, if I had the money, I probably would have signed the paper. I don't know. So it was so beautiful, but they set us on the table, a bunch of people, big room, and they, you know, started the presentation. Hey, you can buy this, and you buy this, and you, oh, how much you spend a year on vacation? Oh, well, this much, okay. Well, hey, what if you you could afford this and this and this and this and that? And then like, okay, we had our mindset already that we're not gonna sign anything, right? And I'm not saying that we could have or anything like that. We just, like, we're not going to try to sign anything. We're not going to sell the truck. We're not going to, you know, sell all kinds of stuff to try to sign. No, we said we're not going to sign. So we said no to the first guy. And then they send another guy. You know, same thing. You know, he's trying to sell and make it. Each time, this guy, salesperson, got better and better and better, more aggressive. You know? And at the we said, I think, no to three different guys. Then we were sent to a different area. And we had to talk to two other guys there. By the time we said no, we said no to those two guys, they were pissed off. You guys are just using us. You guys are just using us for the free tickets. You guys are, we entered the place like VIP, and then we got kicked out through the back door. Right? What happened to the VIP, bro? You know, they were pissed off. We're not going to do that here. No pressure. I'm not going to put no pressure. I don't need a new private jet. The old one is just fine, and here it is. Hey, it's paid for. You know what I'm saying? I don't need another one. Maybe a paint job, Aussie. You know, the bumper needs some painting. You know what I'm saying? Aussie. The truth is, the church should be a safe place to hear God's better way of living without the pressure of manipulation. It should be. It should be. So another reason why it can bring fear when it comes to this topic is shame. Real regrets we might have. That come from bad decisions that we made around money. Maybe shame for doing things for money. Maybe selling drugs for money. Maybe even married for money. Maybe spent all your rent money in Vegas to try to win more money. Been there. Maybe you spent all your grocery money at Las Pulgas or Le Container last night. We feel shame, right? Regarding these decisions, or even this one, failure. Maybe we made some bad investments. If you have some regrets in your past financially, if you're currently not managing your money in a healthy way and making wise decisions, welcome to the community, this community of imperfect, jacked up people. You fit right in. Just look around. Look around. We're all jacked up. Right? Go ahead and tell your neighbor it's okay not to be okay. Like you mean it's okay not to be okay. We have a no shame policy here in this church. We all bring brokenness and our mistakes and our struggles, and then receive God's grace that covers our past and leads us to a better future. That's what God does when we bring our situation to Him. He fixes everything if we move forward with our obedience. We don't need to be fearful when talking about these areas of life, because it affects us big time. A guy in the Bible named Agur, if you are expecting mother, that's a perfect name for your kid. Agur wrote a prayer about the sweet spot, about trying to be in the sweet spot in the finances. This is what he wrote. Proverbs 30:8-9 says this: "Do not make me poor or rich, but give me each day what I need. For if I have too much, I might forget you are the one who provides, saying, 'Who is the eternal one?' Or if I don't have enough, I might become hungry and turn to stealing and thus dishonor the good name of my God." I know that some of us have prayed, "Hey, help me be in the sweet spot. Give me that lottery ticket." Right? A lot of us have prayed that. But what he was saying is that let me be in the balanced middle, Lord. Help me be in that middle, not too much so I don't need you, and not too little so I don't trust you. But that balanced middle. And that balanced middle is hard to live in. It's not easy. It takes decisions. The balanced middle is hard for some churches to be in. That sweet spot. There is different teachings that each church has when it comes to money. There's different. I'm going to give you a few, and then I'm going to tell you which one we believe in. Here's the varying theologies on money. Here's the first one. Prosperity gospel. This says if you love God, you should be rich. If you love God, you should be rich. Make Jesus your choice and you can drive a Rolls Royce. Just send me $1,000 first. This theology looks at verses in the Bible through our cultural lens of materialism, and it's driven by greed. It's about God blessing you so you could live the American dream and accumulating stuff and maintaining a lifestyle like keeping up with the Joneses or keeping up with the Kardashians, material world, because I'm a material girl. And it's all for me. Does God bless? Say with me, absolutely. Absolutely. Does God provide? Does he do financial miracles? Absolutely. But not so we can just have more nicer stuff, more things, and feel superior to those who have less. Maybe that Gucci bag that you feel so proud of is just a Finucci made in China. You never know, right? Maybe you can find it at the Tianguis for $10. And you're feeling all proud about it. You know, hey, I'm superior than you because I'm got a Finucci. You never know. You got to check the tags. You know? Bought some shirts, or like thinking, oh, hey, this is cool shirt, you know, nice brand. And then said, made in Malaysia. Like, what the? What happened here? The prosperity gospel is an extreme. And what often happens in reaction to the to that theology is the other extreme, the poverty gospel. That's your next villain. This says that if you love God, you should be poor. This teaching runs from all wealth and possessions and view them as evil, and is driven by guilt. I mean, you start to feel guilty because you have stuff. What's interesting about this poverty theology, that it sounds holy. And it's almost like the less you have, the closer to God you are. But that's not true. The issue isn't about how many or how few resources you have. The issue is how you view and manage and prioritizes the resources God has given you. That's what God cares about. The Bible neither teaches the prosperity gospel or the poverty gospel. Rather, we in this church believe in the generosity gospel. It says if you love God, you realize how generous he's been to you, how generous he's been to us. And in response to that, we live responsibly, generously towards others, and that's driven by grace. Man, he's given us so much. I guess after everything I've done in my life, if you get the opportunity to be called his child, it's like, wow. Whenever you read about the life of the early church in Scripture, you see a pattern of crazy generosity. And in many ways, it looks unreasonable to the people from the outside. People on the outside looked in and said, why do you do that? I think that's what happened when, as a church, last October, we went out to the streets, we were picking up trash, we were cleaning, painting parks, and we were doing all that stuff, and people were probably saying, what's going on with these people? Why are they doing that? People have not seen that. There was people all over Playas picking up trash. Like, that's so cool that you guys are doing that. So people from the outside looking in is how, where did they get this? Because nobody loves strangers like that. Nobody sacrifices for others like that. Where did this attitude come from? 2 Corinthians 8 shows us where did generosity in the church comes from. This is what it says. Now, brothers and sisters, let me tell you about the amazing gift of grace that's happening throughout the churches in Macedonia. Even in the face of severe anguish and hard times, their elation and poverty have overflowed into a wealth of generosity. Generosity comes from the grace experience. And I think when we understand that, it's like, why wouldn't we apply that stuff? Why wouldn't we serve in the church? Why wouldn't we give to the mission of Jesus? Why wouldn't we love our neighbor? When we experience it, it should always be a revelation of God's generosity to us that produces generosity through us. He did it first to us. Why not give it to other people. God's grace should be changing us and making us more like Jesus. And as we grow in who we are in him, and who are we in him? If you came in here today thinking that you're a loser, that you are this and that you are that, that nobody wants me and nobody loves me, if you think that you're deported, that you're no good for anything, that whatever it is that you came in here with, because that, our identity, who we think we are, is very important. Who we think we are will start acting in who we think. If we think we're a loser, you're going to act like a loser. For those of you who have been in gangs, you thought you were a gang member, what'd you do? You acted like a gang member, right? Who are we in Jesus? It says we are chosen. We are called. We are being changed into his image. We are a new creation. We are the temple of the Holy Spirit. Wow. We are forgiven. We are blessed. We are victorious. We are free. We are free from condemnation. We are more than conquerors. We are his children. And as we grow in who we are, it changes our attitude. It changes our relationship. It changes our actions. It changes the way we think, the way we walk, even the way we view and handle our money. I don't have it all together. I'm preaching to myself. I'm a fellow struggler. Thanks to my wife. Woo! No, seriously, I don't have it all together. I really don't. We're in the same boat. We're in the same boat, just trying to better. Trying to find something better, trying to believe God that God has something better for us. So to help us have the best year ever financially, here are three steps that we would hope to apply. Here's the financial steps. The first one is spend with a plan. Back in the day, a long, 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 long time ago, I bought into the myth that I need to make more money to achieve financial success. So instead of buying an ounce of drugs, I bought a pound of drugs. That was a long, long, long time ago. What people do? Come on now. Hey, I'm just being honest. Can I be myself or what? Yeah. I know your stories too. So, hey. You know what I'm saying? What people do. Yeah, some crazy stuff. A few years back, me and my wife were talking about money, and she got crazy. You're like, and our conversation got intense. You know, and she started raising from her voice. She threw the chancla at me, and she was screaming and yelling. And for the first time in our marriage, I used the B word. I know what you're thinking. You shouldn't use the B word with your wife. Budget. She freaked out. Hey, because she likes to buy candles and candles and candles and candles and candles, and she likes to walk around every aisle at Walmart. You know? So we talked about the budget. Because we found out that we were our spending habits kept us from our dreams. It strangled our finances. And when that happens, what does it do to your marriage? Come on, people. Right? There's problems. There's problems. We went through the money study and we learned that that budget helps you to plan where you want your money to go. Budget is a permission to spend. Because we plan for it. I mean, how cool will it be to be on by the beach drinking your whatever you drink, whatever you, you know, beer, whatever, your piña colada, your mojito, whatever it is that you're drinking, you know, you're looking at the beach and like, hey, and I'm like, how am I going to pay for this? Two, I save for it. I can spend this. Big difference, right? Big difference. When you save for it, permission, budget is permission to spend. The money study taught us to start tracking where our money was going. For a time, we were like, what'd you spend? What'd you buy? I don't remember. Babe, what did you buy at Walmart? I don't know. You know, we started tracking down what we were buying. You know, because a lot of us will realize that we spend a lot of money at Starbucks. You don't see it. But when you do the tracking thing, you'll realize how much money you're spending, and that money, instead of spending it at Starbucks, you're going to, you know, put some gas in your money in your car and maybe showed up to church or maybe bought some food or whatever, you know what I mean? Oh, I can't because you spent it at Starbucks. Or you went to La Container or something, you know? You didn't plan to go to La Container. This is a sign of what? Funny. It's funny. I'm laughing hilariously when I go like this. Oh, yeah. Okay, so every time I do this, right, I'm laughing hysterically. Here's the next one. Save for your future. Proverbs 21:20 says this: the wise man saves for the future, but the foolish man spends whatever he gets. Your income is the most powerful wealth-building tool. Save for your retirement. Prepare for your future. This is probably like a foreign language to many of us, right? What do you mean save for your retirement? What? What do you mean save for your future? What? I mean, if you really think about it, that from people that already lived their lives, what is their struggle at the end of their lives when they have a few years left? How am I going to pay for this? How am I going to pay for that? There's no money to be. You see people here in Mexico selling stuff in the street, the ladies, old men, that they're like, hey, I don't want to be like that. I don't want to put our kids through that. I don't want our kids to be taking care of us. Save for your future. Save for emergencies. What are your dreams? I mean, at the end of the day, you're not going to be, oh, so glad I went to La Container all those weekends. No. I drank all those coffee cups from Starbucks. They were good. Machilado on the double shot. And I'm like, what? I just want coffee. Double shot of mocha. The big moco. Hilarious. Do you want to save for your home? To buy a home? Don't get into debt. Because you can wander into debt, but you can wander out. They call you, hey, what's up with my feria? Give me my money. Some of us don't even pick up the phone because that's what's going on, right? When we get in control where our money is going, it's a lot easier to do this. Give back to God. Let's read the next verse out loud. Proverbs 3, 9 and 10. At the count of three. 1, 2, 3. All right. Is it on your honor the Lord with all your riches and with the first of all you grow. Then your storehouse will be filled with many good things and your barrels will flow over with new wine. Let me read it again. Honor the Lord with your riches and with the first of all you grow. Then your storehouse will be filled with many good things and your barrels will flow over with new wine. So many of us have found ourselves in a place where our spending has become out of hand. Buying things you don't need, like candles and stuff that are probably still new in the box that you never used. Saving is not an option for many of us due to overspending. And the thought of giving, right, means something would go unpaid. Oh, I can't give. How am I going to pay my rent? I can't give. How am I going to buy the food for my kids? I can't give. How am I going to pay the electricity? I can't give. I got the car payment. I can't give. I need to put gas in my car so I can go to work. I can't. What are you going to give? No, man. What? Here's the secret to all of it. And this is not the first time we talk about it here. Here it is. Culture tells us the normal thought in the world. Culture tells us to do it in this order, right? And here's the order. Spend all you make. Spend it all. Then maybe save. And if there's anything left over, maybe give. That's what we do. We spend all we get. Very few of us save. And very few of us give. And it doesn't work. That's why most people live paycheck to paycheck. Right? No los estoy regañando. How do you say it in English? I'm not scolding you. I'm a fellow struggler. I want something better for my home. Scripture teaches to invert this approach. To give first, save second, put it on automatic. That's what we have. Automatic, boom, to go to the savings. It's automatically. Every first of the month, it goes to the savings. Automatic. Give first, save second, and then spend third. Put God first. Flip it upside down. It changes the priorities. The gravitational pull in human nature is towards self, towards us. Everything is for me. It's all mine. Everything that comes to me is for me. I need this. I deserve this. But if we flip the priorities and you say to yourself, I give back to God because of everything he has given me. I give back to God because he gave it to me first. Pay myself second and spend on the rest. I know this is different. This is not normal. But when you live like no one else, let me say it again. But when you live like no one else, later you can live and give like no one else. This is the big idea. The path to our best year ever financially begins with recognizing that I am a manager and not an owner. I remember when we were first dating, my wife was a believer. I wasn't. We weren't supposed to be doing that. And we went to a birthday party in my house, and they were teasing my wife. Hey, you're a Christian? Yeah. My wife was like, yeah, I'm a Christian. So does that mean to you that you give to the church? It was my sister saying, does that mean you give to the church? And I was like on the side of my sister, yeah, yeah. Does that mean you give to the church? Yeah, I give to the church. And then I was like, not my money. That's what I said to my wife in front of my whole family. I didn't understand it. I thought it was my money. It's not. We're managers. Who's in charge? Whose is it? Is it all mine? Am I trying to hold on to it? Am I trying to hoard it? It's all me. It's all about me. The problem with this way of thinking or this way of living is that whatever we close our fist to, whatever we hold on to, that's what we worry about. Everybody go like this. What do you worry about? What do you worry about? What were you worried about in 2018 that is still the first month of 2019? And it could be anything. Whatever you are holding on to, whatever you're closing your fist to, you're going to worry about that. What are you worried about? And it could be anything. It doesn't have to be financial, but I know the situation of a lot of us. Finances is a big deal. What are you worried about? And it could be your marriage. It could be your girlfriend. It could be your whatever. What are you holding on to? When you open your hands and you give it to God, you're in a position to receive. When you open your hands and you give it to God, now you're in a position to receive God's peace. Now you're in a position to receive God's grace. Now you're in a position to receive God's wisdom and God's blessing. And do it God's way. I tried to do all kinds of stuff in my life. You invite the band to come up. And it didn't work. Whatever you're worried about in your life, what you're holding on to, let it go. And what does that mean, let it go? Let it go to try to do it God's way. Let it go. I don't have a job, but let it go, give it to God, and just sit down. No. That's not what I'm saying. It's do it God's way. When we give to God's kingdom, we're becoming part of a big story. God invites us to be generous so we could care for orphans. I want to be part of it. I want to leave that legacy to my kids, my grandkids. I want to do that. I want our kids and our family to be involved, to be part of being generous to people who build homes here in Mexico. God invites us to be generous so we could rescue women and children from human trafficking. I want our kids, I want our grandkids to be part of it. But it starts with us. If they don't see us doing it, they're not going to do it. I want our kids to be part in what God is doing here in Mexico. God is asking us to be generous because it also makes us more like Jesus. Let's protect our loved ones from the problems of finances. Because when there's problems financially, it's going to affect your marriage. There can be fights, discussions. Give it to God. And what that means, do it God's way. Let's bring God's kingdom into our homes. Let's bring God's kingdom into our homes. Let's invite his teaching. Let's invite his spirit. Let's invite his guidance into our homes. I guarantee you, your life will change. Our situations, including myself, our situations will change.